Listen to shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Here we go. Welcome to Shoot the Defence on FNX, brought to you by My Sports Fair Save Association and, well, anyone else that wants to sponsor us, really. I'm your host, Stel, and my co-host, as ever, is Rodri Giggs. Rodri, welcome to the show, mate.
Cheers, pal. Good to you.
Yeah, I'm good, mate. I'm good. Unfortunately, Yanakis isn't here. He's got the flu, but I've got this lovely balloon here with a baffled face, which actually looks like him every week, as you guys can see. So
he looks taller as well on that picture.
I've purposely made his head the right size in proportion to his body. Right, so our two guests tonight are the new star of Arsenal Fan TV, Lee.
Oh, God.
And former Wimbledon Jamaica international, Marcus Gale. Well, Marcus, welcome back to the show, mate. It's been a while. How's it going?
Well, thanks for having me back on. It's been a while, but life's good. No complaints. Keeping healthy and fit.
Excellent, excellent. Well, look, Lee and Rod, I don't know if you know this story because I keep reminding Marcus of this and he doesn't feel guilty, which is good. Marcus is the reason why I got beaten up at school once. You know?
Why is that?
No, they didn't, because I'm still here. Marcus scored the winning goal for Wimbledon against United in the FA Cup, and I went to school the next day and got a few bells kicked out of me. Thanks, Andrew Wilson and James Humphrey and Andre Johnson. But yeah, so that's the reason why I got beat up. There you go. It's my claim to fame. It's all right, man. It's okay. It's okay. I love you still, man. Don't worry. Anyway, Lee, how you doing, mate? You've made your 500 million mile round trip from Belarus to back to the Emirates and then back to wherever you are now.
That was a bit of a mission. I think we ended up going through six airports, five different countries, slept 5 hours in 50-odd hours. I made it back and still ended up going to the game at the weekend. So, yeah, I've caught up on my sleep and I'm ready for action.
By the sounds of it, I think you might have needed that sleep at the Emirates, actually, because the game wasn't great, was it?
Oh, mate. So, do you know what? There's a myth going around that Arsenal are good to watch, but I think that was left in 2004.
Fair enough. Hey, you said it, not me. I don't want to get the death threats. Do you know what I mean?
I'm used to it, man. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, I've seen them. Don't worry about it. Well, Jeff, before we start the show, I just want to say on behalf of everyone at Shoot the Defence, we'd just like to offer our condolences to the friends and families of the victims in Vegas. Now, we have many friends and listeners over in the States, and we're offering our support just as you guys have supported us. I've never been to Vegas, guys. Have any of you been? Marcus, as an ex-pro, I guess you've been? No?
I haven't been, surprisingly, but I'm going out there just to have a little look, just a ticket off the list, but I would probably look to go Grand Canyon more than anything.
You know?
Not into the gambling and all that sort of stuff. I want to see some nature, some raw nature.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Because I know you've got a beagle, haven't you? Is it two you've got?
Yeah, I've got a beagle. I've got one, but we do look after other people's beagles when they're going away for the weekend or whatever.
There you go. Superb. Lee, you've been to Vegas?
No, I've never been to America, full stop, let alone Vegas, mate. So, yeah, I'm just never got round to going there. Been South America, but not America.
Well, do you know what? I bet you've got a lot of Arsenal fans on your channel. They might want to put you up, I guess.
To be honest, I do get a lot of love from America. Big up all the Americans listening to this because, they all show me loads of love.
Excellent. And Rod, tell me you've been.
I have been, actually, yeah.
Yes.
I have been. I actually got married there, so...
Nice.
Less said the better about that.
Okay.
beautiful place though. Grand Canyon, went there. It was nice. We got a helicopter ride. Nice, beautiful.
Did you keep the Elvis costume?
Still got it.
Excellent. Now you got to wear that on the next show, or even the Halloween show. How about that? All right, let's talk about the football then. And after trouncing Liverpool 5-0 a few weeks ago, Man City passed their second big test of the season with flying colours, beating Champions Chelsea 1-0 at Stamford Bridge. Rod, this was actually a very convincing victory, mate, and I think City probably could have won it by a wider margin, but for some good goalkeeping. Great performance, wasn't it?
It was a fantastic performance. It was a real, you know, marker stamping down for Chelsea and against Chelsea, sorry. And it was just a fantastic performance. They dominated from start to finish. One that we're looking for, really, to play a top team. And you know, it's all right playing the Stokes, the West Hams, but City have played a real top side now and got a good result. And, you know, it's a real marker that they've put down. It was a fantastic result, like I said.
Yeah, and Kevin De Bruyne's goal was an absolute pearler, wasn't it?
It was. He can do that. He can. Them little pockets he gets in, and you know, on the last third, he can be either foot as well. He can be lethal. It was a great finish.
Mm-hmm. And that's for another great footballer, his compatriot Marcus. Were you surprised to see Hazard play up top on his own when Morata went off injured?
Yeah, I was a little bit. I feel that with Conte, he probably feels that look, he's such a great player, he can play anywhere. But I feel personally, he always needs a front man to play off so he can carry the ball at great distance and play that key pass instead of him being the one on the end of that key pass. So I didn't think it fitted with his sort of game and got the best out of him. But you know, if you're Batshuayi, you're thinking, hold on, you're just filling Hazard up front instead of putting on myself. You can score the goals. Is that a lack of faith in him or whatever? Who knows?
That's a fair point. Well, Lee, I mean, given how Conte turned Chelsea around last season, mate, let's be fair, he's actually entitled to get it wrong every now and again. But that being said, something doesn't seem right at Chelsea, does it?
I tend to disagree. I know a lot of Chelsea fans. Most of my mates are Chelsea fans. So for the last sort of 12 or 14 years, they've been giving me untold amounts of stick. But a lot of them this season think that they're nowhere near. And I don't buy into that. I said the last time I came here, I think Chelsea will win the title. I still stand by that. Yes, they looked poor at the weekend. But, you know, when you lose your £70 million striker after 20-odd minutes, then you're always going to struggle because the backup option to that is Batshuayi. And he obviously don't fancy him to play in a game of that magnitude. So I think it was wrong to put Hazard up front. I personally would have chucked Batshuayi on. But, you know, I'm not getting paid to make these decisions. But, yeah, I don't really buy into there being Chelsea are not quite right. I think they are, but I also think that the fact that they've signed some new players that they're trying to integrate into the team this season, they're just struggling a little bit to get them in and make it a smooth transition from what they had last season with Matic. I mean, Bakayoko looked out of his depth at the weekend. But we all know that he will come good because he is a fantastic footballer. But, yeah, I think that game was a step too far for him personally. But come the end of the season, they'll definitely be there. And like I said, I still tip them to win the title. Last season, we were raving about Man City winning 11 in a row or whatever it was. And they came nowhere near last season. So a little bit early to get carried away on the Man City and Man United hype. But yeah, at the same time, like I said, I think Chelsea would definitely be up there challenging for the whole season.
This is a question to all you guys. So anyone can just chip in with this one. I was asked if there's anything wrong with Chelsea in the background or whatnot. And we know that they've got a history of sacking managers. They're not scared to let a manager go, even if they have won the league. We saw it with Ancelotti, you know. But when you look at that three-man central defensive partnership that they got with Luiz, Christensen, and Cahill, or even maybe Azpilicueta that will come in, should Chelsea be a bit concerned? Because I don't see much, I don't know, fluidity or some kind of cohesion there. Is it because it's a new partnership? I don't know. What do you reckon, Marcus?
I think they miss Matic to a degree as well. I think when you lose such a big, important player, now we're seeing how important he was in that team because of how he's playing for United at the moment. Playing three at the back, it's always a tricky one, but Conte's well equipped to play like that. He's played like that with Juve, Italy as well. So for him to introduce it at Chelsea, he's won the title on it. So there shouldn't be any complaints with it. But something, just they're picking for the team. I think it's a combination of there ain't no Matic in that sort of screening role. There's obviously Costa's gone and Morata's come in, so that sort of it's caused a bit of headache for the players in there, I think, and they're still not come to terms with it quite yet.
Mm. And Roger, do you think Rüdiger and Luiz will be two fantastic central defenders to have with Gary Cahill? I mean, we saw Rüdiger clear one off the line the other day, but he's still getting to grips with the Premier League, and we saw Luiz, he's quite petulant still.
Yeah, it's going to take time, but like Marcus touched upon, they won the league that way, and he's very equipped to playing that way, Conte, and adapting that way. The Matic thing is obviously a big reason why as well. But you've got to look at, forget about last year. They had a week to prepare for games. They're playing games, two, three games a week now. They've got a weaker squad. They've got a weaker squad, arguably. So it's last year's gone. It's going to be a lot difficult now. City have got better. United have got better. Tottenham look like they're firing all cylinders as well. So, I do agree with Lee. I do think they'll be there or thereabouts, but I don't think they'll win it. Not at all.
Fair enough. And Lee, as for Man City, they haven't conceded that many goals this season. They seem to be a bit tight at the back. I know that people say they haven't really been tested, but they trounced Liverpool. They gave Chelsea a good scene, so to speak, because Chelsea really weren't in the game. I know you mentioned the hype about the Manchester clubs. What is it about United this year that you feel may not take them over the line, so to speak?
I look at, if Lukaku gets injured for a sustained period of time, is there anybody that can come in and step into his shoes and score the amount of goals he's currently scoring? If he carries on at the rate he's going, he's going to score nearly 40 goals this season. Do you know what I mean? So, he's a big worry. If I was a Man United fan, you've got to wrap him in cotton wool and keep him fit all season. If you keep him fit, with Jose as your manager, you've got half a chance, always. No matter what team you've got out, you've got half a chance with him as your manager. In my opinion, he's the best manager in the league. But I don't totally rule United out. Obviously, they're going to be there or thereabouts. So I just sway more towards Chelsea for the fact that they've already done it. Man United, with that crop of players, haven't. Jose's now got his own team, his own players. He's brought through a couple of players. Van Gaal got in. So he's mixed them all together and they're doing really well at the minute. But at the same time, they haven't really played anyone of any real calibre yet. They haven't gone down the road of Man City that have trounced Liverpool and then gone to Chelsea and won. We'll see how good Man United really are when they come up against the Liverpools, the Arsenals, the Chelseas, etc. All three of them, they're very, very good teams. Very good teams. So they're all going to be there or thereabouts. Just quickly on Tottenham as well. You mentioned Tottenham. I think that they're very good, but they're not going to be anywhere near the title this season, regardless of how many goals Kane scores. I think that the Wembley factor is proving a problem. And yes, they're smashing teams away from home, but it's at home where you start to challenge for titles. Yes, the away form is great, but if you can do that home and away, then yeah, you'll be up there. They don't seem to be able to have got their head round Wembley yet, which is why I rule them completely out. But the other three, it'd be between one of them three for the title.
There you go. Brilliant. Well, look, speaking of Man United, their 4-0 win against a pretty pathetic Crystal Palace put them on top of the pile before City's winning the capital. But while things are pretty rosy for the managers in Manchester, the same can't be said about their counterparts 30 miles or so away in Liverpool. Everton's 1-0 loss at home to Burnley and Liverpool's failure to keep a clean sheet again in Newcastle led to more questions about Koeman and Klopp's decision-making process. Marcus, Koeman has failed to replace Lukaku, while Klopp's decision to pin all his defensive hopes on Van Dijk appear to have backfired, well, for now anyway. Surely the solutions to both problems are simple enough, no? I mean, what's your take on both situations?
I think you've touched on it. The solutions are quite simple, but down to their management style or their ego, or how they think they can get away with not replacing the Lukaku at Everton, on one hand, and then on the other hand was Klopp. I think he had a decent defender in Sarko, but he sold him to Crystal Palace.
Mm-hmm.
I know he wanted Van Dijk, but you've got someone that is just a brute of a defender and that can galvanise players around him. So if there's a personal issue that's helped him get out of the club because Klopp didn't quite like him or whatever it was, but he might have been someone that could have fitted in and just defended and defend ugly. You can't always just defend nice and cultured and all that. Sometimes you need that sort of, but I dare say it, a character type. You know, if you need to put someone out of the game, you put someone out of the game. But it's a bit strange that they both think they can just get away with not replacing or sorting out those positions when it's quite clear to everybody that that's what they should do.
Mm. Well, you mentioned the word ego to describe both managers. And I can completely agree with you when it comes to Jurgen Klopp, especially. Now, I don't mean to bash the guy, but I remember when you were playing for Wimbledon, you were a pretty tough outfit. Teams didn't like going to Selhurst Park. Do you think Liverpool lack that steel, so to speak?
Yeah, a little bit. I think they've got a great front four. They've got probably five or six players to choose to put into that. So there's healthy competition. But at the same time, they still seem a little bit weak at the back. And, you know, my old team, Wimbledon, we would have looked to penetrate at the back for them because that would have been their soft spot. When you got good-looking centre-halves, if they're someone good-looking, that was our target. We didn't want to see them just smile on the pitch or anything like that. We'd have to put a frown on his face or a cut or something just to put them out of their own comfort zone. I don't think Liverpool equipped, you know, at the back to be tough. That's where Saka would have come in for me because he's just a brute of a defender. He just wants a defence. Yes, he's not too pretty on the eye in terms of technically, but what he gives you, he just gives you wholehearted defensive play.
I agree. Brilliant. Now, Rod, both managers gave touchy responses to journalists' questions about the games and their future. Now, Koeman claims the amount of money spent on signing shouldn't matter because they've recouped more than what's gone out, hence the net spend conundrum again. Klopp, on the other hand, asked the journalists if it was the first match he'd watched because he dare say it was a fair result. Do you think they're feeling the pressure much?
I think they'll both be feeling the pressure. It's more so Koeman because where they are on the table. Liverpool, you know, like Marcus said, they only need a couple of defenders and then they're nearly there. So it's just probably frustrating for Klopp because they're dominating games. You know, Newcastle have one chance, they score. Even though it's poor defending, it was just one chance really and they've been punished for it. So, you know, when you see these interviews after the game, they're wound up, they're frustrated and some stupid journalist says the wrong thing, it's going to run up the wrong way. So they're going to have a little, they're going to feel under pressure at them time straight after the game. So, but yeah, they're going to be feeling it, especially Koeman. But, you know, the chairman's come out recently and backed him. So it's just the players that he's brought in. They all seem to be the same. So they were desperately in need of a striker. They've brought Sigurdsson in. I'll put my teeth in.
Sigurdsson,
Rooney. They just need Klassen. A striker. Yeah, Klassen. They seem to be the same kind of players, so it's going to be difficult for Everton. Plus, the Thursday night games is never a good thing when you're playing Saturday, Sunday. Even though it's Wednesday, you play Wednesday, play Saturday. It's never the same when you play Thursday nights.
Mm. Do you think Rooney's had much of an influence there, though, Rod?
I thought every time I've watched Ray Rooney, he played well. When he played against Manchester United, I thought he was the best player for Everton. So he's done well, but you know the things that off the field hasn't helped. So, but on the field, yeah, I thought he's been okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. There's a friend of mine made a comment about Sigurdsson on Twitter the other day, saying he's a £45 million free kick taker, which I think is a bit harsh.
You have to play him in the right position, mate. He's playing him out left midfield, right midfield. He's a number 10. And he's a goal scoring and a good, decent assist as well.
Well, we've seen that. Struggled without him, haven't we? They've struggled without him, haven't they, Swansea? So he's obviously an important player.
Every time I've seen him, he was Swansea's best player last year. Every time he played against us, he always scored or he was dominant for Swansea. So he's a good player, but you need to play these players in the same position. And that's difficult when you've got Wayne Rooney and he wants to play number 10.
Yeah, fair point. Well, Lee, I know you're a finger out of Kai, but if he was in the same boat as Klopp and Koeman, hypothetically speaking, the media would be all over him like a rash, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they would. The only difference I would say is the fact that Wenger's been there a hell of a lot longer than the other two, which is probably why they'd be all over him like a rash, because it'd be a repeat of the last 10, 15 years of same old rubbish. But in terms of Koeman, Rod sort of stole my thunder a little bit a minute ago. Klassen, Rooney and Sigurdsson, they're all exactly the same type of player. They're all a number 10 stroke, false nine, whatever you want to call it. They haven't replaced Lukaku with a Lukaku's type player. They haven't bought a striker, not one of any calibre anyway. So what they've tried to do, which is a massive mistake, is go and buy three players, all the number 10s really, to hope that they get goals that way, and it ain't worked for them. And then obviously they're getting leaking goals left, right and centre at the back. So I think that if they address the goals issue, they'll start flying up the table, because I think he is a good manager. And I would have had him at Arsenal in the summer. All day long I would have took Koeman, because I think he gets it. He gets what it means. He's obviously been at Barcelona as a player. Barcelona are a massive football club. He obviously gets what it takes to be at a massive football club, albeit that was a long time ago. But I look at Liverpool. I see a stat the other day. I think Brendan Rodgers has got less points than Klopp after the same amount of games, or Klopp's got more points, vice versa. The only difference being Brendan Rodgers had Luis Suarez and Raheem Sterling. So if you had a Luis Suarez and a Raheem Sterling in Klopp's team now, would they be up there challenging for the title like Brendan Rodgers did? Well, I'd say yes. So again, they're missing that one or two top players that can just score out of nothing.
Oh, yeah, Gerrard.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Forgot all about him. But I mean, they've got Mane, and he's been out. He's been out for a few weeks. So I still think they'll be up there for top four. I'm not sure whether they'll get top four, but they'll definitely be up there. They remind me a lot of Arsenal over the last few years. They're really good to go forward and get goals, but they're absolutely tragic defensively. And that will be their Achilles heel, and that'll be why they don't win anything this season, because they cannot defend. They look great against the big teams, because the big teams have a lot of the ball and come onto them. So then they can use their pace with Salah and Mane. But when they get a team that want to park the bus and drag it out for a 0-0, that's when they struggle, and then they get done 1-0. Yeah, and that is exactly what Arsenal have done for years and years and years now. But yeah, there we go.
So the thing is,
we play them next, don't we?
Next, yeah, week after. Yeah, week after, isn't it?
Yeah, 14th of October.
Yeah, next weekend.
So look, I understand the notion of attacking from or defending from the front, so to speak. But it's like Tony Evans said when he came on the show the other week. It's almost as if Klopp has completely ditched the whole defensive aspect of his game. But I don't want to slate Klopp too much, because I do it every week and people have a moan about it. But it's just the same mistakes time and time again. And the sooner he addresses it, the better.
Can I just touch on that, Stel? The goal against Newcastle, that's nothing down with him defending. That's just poor defending with two individuals. There's two against one. That should never, ever happen. That schoolboy stuff, that.
Well, it's individual errors, isn't it?
Both of them, both of them with bad positioning. The one was nearly on the turn, and the other one should have been on the tuck round already, seeing the danger, but none of them did. And it was poor defending. That's not down to the Klopp. That's down to personal errors, really.
But there you go. So Marcus, you can't coach intelligence, can you?
No, you can't. If you've got that sort of basic sort of intelligence, of learning and taking things on board, information, it's how you process it, and ultimately it's how you execute those decisions that you make or don't make. I feel with Klopp, he's trying to create like a full centre-half somewhere along the line. With a ghost striker and all this stuff, all this sort of stuff, maybe trying to create a ghost centre-half and maybe not go in there with a brute of a centre-half that can just do like a play-on job and just be the rough edge to the team that's needed, someone that's happy to defend and enjoys defending. Bit of a mystery, but these guys are paid a hell of a lot of money to make these sort of decisions. Touching back onto Koeman, I think he will get more stick out of the two, because he hasn't replaced a £70 million striker. Klopp might get stick, but he's got strikers in there, he's got firepower to go and get him goals. Whereas, Koeman, he's sold Lukaku and bought him free number 10, so to speak, to try and recapture those sort of goals. But is he going to play all three of them at the same time to get those goals? I can't see him doing that.
Yeah.
And that's why I think I won't get the stick, because ultimately, I Arsenal, they still win an FA Cup. They might win one of the charity shields or whatever it is. They still get a little bit of trophy and silverware every other season compared to Klopp and Koeman.
Mm. See, the thing is, I feel for Koeman a bit because who is available or who was available that is a proven Premier League goal scorer that's going to replace the goals that, that Lukaku got Everton? I mean, if you're looking at proven goals...
Jermaine Defoe.
Yeah. But would he play every week? Can he play every week?
I think so. I think he's class, mate. He was still banging them in last season, wasn't he? And he would have been a freebie, a free sign-in, so it was worth taking a risk and just throwing wages at him.
Marcus, do you agree?
I would agree with that, yeah. Definitely. I don't think age is anything to Jermaine. I think he's as fit as anything. You know, the sports science, how he kind of respects his own body and knows what to do with it at the right time. I think he can play on for a few more years to come. So for him to go to a big club like Liverpool or so on wouldn't have been a problem for him.
Well, they're talking about going for Giroud. Would you drive him to Everton, Lee?
I knew you were going to ask something like that. it's a tough one, right? It's hard to slate someone that scored 100 goals for your football club, but he ain't going to be first choice, and he'll never be a first choice for me, ever. It's not his fault that he only cost £12 million, and for £12 million, I'd say he's been an absolute bargain when you look at some of the other fees that have been going around in the last 5 years. So, no, I don't think I would drive him to Everton. I think I'd keep him, but he wouldn't be my first choice. Obviously, Lacazette's the first man on the team sheet.
There you go. Brilliant. Well, speaking of strikers, it's a nice little segue to talk about Harry Kane and his brace against Huddersfield left the mainstream media questioning his position in the world's top five strikers. Now, this leads on to our bite back section where we're going to do our first competition of the season. Now, the lovely people over at My Sports who have put a Joma jacket up as a prize for the winner. And we've had loads of entries. I mean, we asked our audience who they think is the top five strikers in the world. And we've had some great responses, especially from ex-pros and coaches and whatnot. Brian Dean, who happened to be the Premier League's first ever goal scorer, says Kane, Messi, Ronaldo, Lukaku and Cavani. Mickey Adams, former Leicester manager and author of My Life in Football, which is available on bitebackpublishing.com, one of our partners, had to get that plug in. He says Kane, Lukaku, Neymar, Messi and Ronaldo. Mikael Beck, former Middlesbrough and Denmark striker, says Messi, Ronaldo, Lewandowski, Griezmann and Falcao. Charlie Quirk, good mate of ours, actor of Birds of a Feather, says Kane, Aguero, Messi, Ronaldo, but he can't choose from Neymar, Lewandowski and Aubameyang, for the fifth place. And good old Nards, Daniel Nardiello says Kane, Suarez, Benzema, Lukaku and Aguero, but then he changed his mind. He thought, well, maybe Lewandowski should be in there, but he wasn't sure who to take out. Now, gents, who do you guys reckon are in the top five? I'll start with you, Rod.
It's a difficult one. It's Kane, number one, for me.
Yeah. In the world at the moment?
Yeah, for me, yeah. Definitely, yeah. Okay. Suarez.
Yeah.
Aguero.
Mm-hmm.
Lukaku. Mbappe.
Okay. I'm just writing them down.
I'm leaving out Lewandowski there. I don't know why, but I don't see a lot of German football. That's probably why.
No worries. Marcus, who you got?
I'll go with the first obvious two, Messi, Ronaldo.
Okay.
I think they're the kind of freakish sort of goal scorers. When you think they're getting older, but they're still producing that sort of level of goal ratio.
So, Marcus, do you class those two as strikers then?
I think you can't even class them as anything because they can do absolutely anything whenever they choose to. I think Gary Neville said it the other day, goes, they're freaks.
Mm.
I can't disagree with him. I just think they can play anywhere in that front lineup and still produce the goals. I would say they're strikers.
Okay. And you went for Rutherman?
Number three, I would say Falcao.
Okay.
I know he didn't really cut it over here, but he's still proven that he's gone back to, where is it, France with Monaco, still banging in goals for fun. I like the fact that Aguero is here as well. He's done it over a long period of time here. I think he cements himself. And I think Kane just getting to that top five for me. I'm just looking at Kane as how would, for me, Kane is like our new version of an Alan Shearer type. Yeah, so okay. I think for Kane to get like the world's best player, I think he needs to go abroad to go and prove that he can go and kick it in Spain or France or something, somewhere different to go and cement that.
Mm.
But I think for here, domestically, yeah, he'd be number one.
Okay. Goalie.
Right. I'm not classing Messi and Ronaldo as strikers.
Okay.
This is, so don't laugh at my five that I've picked. if I was, then Messi and Ronaldo would be in it, obviously. But I'm not. Yeah. I'm not. I'm not picking Harry Kane as number one, by the way. That ain't happening.
Why would you?
I'm going with Aguero as my number one. I think the guy is absolutely brilliant. I'm going with Kane number two. Number three, Lewandowski.
Yep.
Number four, Aubameyang. Number five, Higuain.
Okay. The proverbial final bottler. You're putting him in.
Yeah. Mate, you've only got to look at his goal scoring record in Juventus. The guy, although he looks overweight every time I've seen him, he knows Lee, where the onion bag is.
If Higuain and Luis Suarez come up for sale for Arsenal, you take Higuain.
Yeah, but I'm not counting Suarez as an out and out striker. He's more of a false nine. He's not a striker. That's how I look at Suarez. He just plays where he wants.
Okay.
I know. You know. Same with Messi. Same with Ronaldo. Them three players, they just basically go where they want and do what they want. That's
yeah. But Suarez for Liverpool is a striker. No, he didn't play that role for Liverpool. He's a striker.
Yeah, that was years ago though. That's why I didn't pick him. I picked him based on like the last 12 months or whatever. Okay. But yeah, if we are going to class Suarez as a striker, then I'll drop Higuain out for Suarez.
I don't understand people who have picked that. But if they're going to pick Messi and Ronaldo, they've surely got to be number one and number two. I don't know how they can be three and four in people's 100%. Choice.
100%. Messi's the best player I've seen in 35 years of being alive, mate. Best player by a mile. Yeah, then obviously Ronaldo's a second.
Yeah, but I'm like you. I don't catch them as a striker. But like Marcus said, you put them anywhere, they'll score more goals than anyone.
Of course, yeah.
Well, you're going to laugh at this because we put out, obviously, a tweet asking for everyone to give us their opinion. And I totaled up the votes and the amount of people that came in with, you know, and Harry Kane got most votes. Well, I wouldn't even say he got the majority, but out of all of them, he got the most. He got 14% of votes, right, as number one striker. Right.
Wow. Flavour of the month.
Yeah. Number two. Number two was Messi. Number three, Dybala. Number four, Aguero. So you've got three Argentinian strikers as the best in the world, according to our voters, if you're looking at votes in total. Funny that, because Argentina can't win World Cups or major tournaments with those three. And Lewandowski, the fifth one. So yeah, three Argentinians and Lewandowski and Kane. They're the four that got the most votes.
Do you know what? Sorry to butt in. I personally think Dybala is absolutely unbelievable. But every time I've seen him, he's not playing as a striker. You know, that's why I'm picking strikers, like sole out-and-out strikers. But yeah, if it was a attacking five, then Dybala would get in my five all day long because he's class, and Griezmann as well.
And Griezmann. So you'd still keep your guy in?
No. See, this is the problem. There's so many good attackers that can score goals. Yeah, but I thought the question was strikers, like out-and-out strikers.
Yeah, that's what it was. And then obviously people have got their own opinions and views as to what constitutes a striker. You know, I wouldn't want Higuain because I know that in a World Cup final, one-on-one with the keeper will put it wide. But that's another story. You're going to laugh at my one, or the one particular one. I'm going to go with Aguero, Suarez, Lewandowski, Diego Costa, and Harry Kane. I still think Diego Costa.
Yeah, I didn't think of him.
Because he hasn't played for 6 months, has he? Yeah. You kind of forget about people like that. But I think with Costa, I admire him because even when the chips are down, even when you're 2-3-0 down, you got him up front, he'll be a nuisance. He'll, you know, get in defenders' faces. He'll cause aggro. You know, he'd be just snidey, like really horrible, horrible to play against.
It sounds like that Danny Longdon, that Johnson.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. Precisely. Just walks in the house, makes a cup of tea and walks out. You know what I mean? Yeah, so those are my five. But I'm not sure who to go with it. In fact, I do know who to go with when it comes to the winner. There was one... he went with, let's have a look, where is he? His name is Ash. He went with Kane, Messi, Lukaku, Aguero, and Dybala. And the reason why I've chosen him is because, in comparison to all the votes, that's the closest one to meeting all of them. He's only got Lukaku wrong. He's got Kane, he's got Messi, he's got Aguero. Sorry, he's got Dybala wrong as well. But he's got Dybala there as well. So the only one he...
You only picked, let's have it right. You only picked him because he picked Lukaku.
No! But I didn't pick him. I didn't pick him. He would have got 24% to represent something else, which I can't mention. Right. So yeah, I'm going to give it to Ash from Flash Plays. And don't forget, don't worry, he hasn't got like 10,000 followers. That's not why. He's only got like 107 or something. So yeah, give him a follow.
Fair play.
There you go. Right. So I'm glad we've decided that Ronaldo and Messi aren't strikers. Yeah, that's good to know. Just for everyone else that was arguing about it.
No, if the question was goal scorers, then
you put
they'd be in, yeah, striker.
They'd be in 100%. They'd be in 100%. Yeah. All right. In other news, since we've mentioned Messi, can't not mention the Catalan government's referendum on independence, and that coupled with La Liga's refusal to move Barcelona's clash with Las Palmas to Saturday instead of Sunday led to the club deciding that it will be played behind closed doors, i.e. an empty 100,000 seat stadium, or it might be like the empty had at Man City, 100,000 blue seats or 20,000 of them. Anyway, Marcus, unfortunately, politics and football go hand in hand, as you know, something we're seeing more and more these days. Now, the announcement to play the game behind closed doors was made 25 minutes before kickoff. So you've got 99,000 people standing outside. What do you make of the whole situation, mate?
Well, I think it's disgusting that you've got, you know, the police beating people looking to make their votes, and you know, there's elderly people in that crowd as well getting beaten with batons. We're seeing on social media and stuff. It's a sad situation that, you know, freedoms are being challenged like that. You know, we've all got a right to vote. Barcelona's history, and, you know, when you look back into it, there was always treated differently, and they've always been fighting for their own freedom, yeah, from, you know, the Spanish lead up with General Franco and stuff. So it seemed like, for me, fans were probably safer in the stadium watching the game, because at least you know where they are. But, you know, for them to be beaten outside and all this sort of stuff, it's just totally disgusting.
Yeah, it's bonkers. But have you ever played a game behind closed doors? Have you had that kind of environment before?
I think guys might even agree, but most games, Wimbledon, are behind closed doors for us. Just sort of size crowds we get. Man United came back with 25,000 in there. They'll probably take over the ground with 15,000. But I've never personally played in a behind closed doors game for any sort of political reasoning or anything like that. But I think thankfully Wimbledon was near enough that most weeks at home. But as I said, it was totally disgusting to see those sort of pictures of people just going to a boat and being beaten down.
What were the attendances like in Jamaica when you played for the national team, mate?
Full house, man.
Yeah.
30,000. With a speaker box playing in each corner, with a bashman going through the game. Just had this natural rhythm, which is important.
Yeah.
So it kind of helped the players as well, that stay relaxed and you just play to the rhythm, so to speak. And anyhow, you scored at the National Stadium, then imagine the sound of the speaker box on it. Whole place erupted. Brilliant experience, you know, just to even play out there.
Can you imagine? I mean, they're doing pretty well so far, aren't they? I mean, they did pretty well in the Gold Cup, and they got someone like Romario Williams up front that's doing really well for a Charleston Battery in USL.
Yeah, some good players coming through again still. You know, I was told by my old coach, Brazilian guy called René Simões, who was the national manager for a few years. He said, because Marcus, there's no difference between a 15-year-old Brazilian and a 15-year-old Jamaican. So the problem is the coaching after that age, and that's where the difference is. from what he saw in Jamaica, he could see the organic sort of skill level of the players there. But he just said it's just down to the coach and after that. That separates the nations.
Yeah, the powers that be, so to speak. Yeah. Well, Lee, the finger of blame points to La Liga president Javier Tebas, an ardent Real Madrid fan and someone who likes to rub Barca the wrong way. Now, not only did he change his Twitter profile photo to a heart with the Spanish and Catalan flags merging to a heart shape, he gave Las Palmas permission to wear a badge of the Spanish flag on the shirts to show unity of Spain, inverted commas. And we say the Premier League is dodgy.
We're not going to get sued if I say some of the stuff I'm about to say.
Too alleged.
Well, the Spanish League is one of the most corrupt football leagues in world football.
Allegedly.
in my opinion. You know, them two teams, Barcelona and Real Madrid, whilst they're massive football clubs, they have the monopoly on that whole league in terms of TV rights, you know, getting debts written off, etc. You know, and for too long it's gone on. And, you know, we see with the Neymar deal, Barcelona has spat their dummy out and started crying like babies because Neymar left. Well, you know, they've been doing that to teams for years and years and years. Two decades they've been nicking people's best players. And then as soon as it happens to them, they want to start bitching and whinging about it. So, you know, that league, I've got no sympathy for any of the teams in that league, especially them two, that have something spun on them and you know, they get done what they've done to others. In terms of what's happening over there politically, like Marcus just said, nobody should be going to a football match and getting beaten. Nobody should be going to go and vote and getting beaten. I've seen videos of little kids being thrown down the street by police. I've seen police smashing firemen over the head, you know, and it's all gone mad. And, you know, we live in a world where we should be able to express our views freely without being like given any hate or without being given any physical abuse for it. Now, you know, obviously it runs deeper and this president is just an idiot from what it comes across to me. You know, you can't be going changing Twitter profiles and expecting not to come out looking like an idiot. You know, you're supposed to be running a big organisation. You know, and he's going on like he's still in primary school, you know. But, you know, like I say, I don't really know the full ins and outs of it. I haven't really paid it much attention because as soon as I see it was a Real Madrid fan that's hating on Barcelona, then, you know, I sort of switched off a little bit. But I've got the basics of it. But, you know, I've been to Spain so many times in my life, various different parts of Spain. And I can tell you, they actually hate each other, like properly hate each other. I've never seen Barcelona and Real Madrid fans sat in a pub together watching a football match without it ending in violence. Yeah, and that's sad, man.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't want to walk down the Seven Sisters Road when we've beaten Spurs, but, I'd sit in there, I've been sat in pubs before and watched Arsenal Spurs and it's been banter, do you know what I mean? But with them, for some reason, maybe it's their culture, I don't know, but they genuinely want to smash each other's faces in. That's the way it's come across to me. I just find it all a little bit over the top, really. Game of football.
It runs deeper than just football. You've got Madrid, which is obviously, you know, the capital of the country. And people from Madrid or Madristas, they're known to be a bit stuck up, apparently. And then you've got the Catalans, you know, who want to be an independent state. And they're seen as beneath, you know, and they want this independent referendum, which happens to be illegal in the Spanish government's eyes. So naturally, when the police get involved, and you know, I don't know about you, Rod, but I went to the Nou Camp for the semi final, and they kept us in for well over an hour, and even some Reds were beaten up just for being, you know, United fans. So the Spanish police are brutal.
It happens over there. It happened in '99 when I was there. If you don't look, you don't be careful, and you mind your P's and Q's, you'll get a baton over the head, no problem over there.
Right. Well, speaking of the whole political side of things, Rod, PK, he's a strong support for Catalan independence, and this has led to the Spanish fans jeering him while on international duty. We saw it on Sky Sports earlier today that he was warming up in a training session. They were booing him. He's offered to quit playing for Spain if his presence causes issues. Now, do you think Piqué is actually right to be so vocal about his political views?
It's a difficult one, to be honest, Del. You know, politics and sports and football, it shouldn't really mix, but obviously in this day and age, it has. For me, Gerard Piqué, he's obviously seen the scenes and he feels strong about it. He's from there. You know, why not? Why not say something? Why, if you feel strong enough about it? You know, he was obviously emotional yesterday when he's saying it. It's just a sad part of politics that gets involved with football that we don't need, really. But, you know, if you feel strong about it, why not quit? Why not stand up to your beliefs if he really believes that strong enough about it?
Yeah. It just seems that now it's coming to the back end of his career. He doesn't seem to really care too much who he upsets.
Well, no, listen, he's won the World Cup. He's won the Champions League. He doesn't need to win anything. You know, he's been a great servant for Spain, and he still would be. You know, not blessed with centre-halves. So it'd be a big miss for him. But, you know, it's a difficult one. This bloke, the guy who's head of the Liga, really should just. It's just a sad affair, really.
Yeah. Well, he's got previous anyway. I remember when Barcelona played Valencia a few years ago, and bottles were thrown at Messi and Suarez, and he turned around and he said, "Well, you know, they deserved it because they're provoking the Valencia fans. What? Because they won at the Mestalla? I don't understand." And he's basically accused Man City of laundering money at Girona, which is a feeder club in Spain. So he's got previous. He's not.
That's probably true, to be fair.
Well,
I don't. Anyone connected to Real Madrid cannot say, because they've been doing it for years. They get debts written off. It's been happening for years. And same like Touchwan Lee said, Barcelona have been taking best players. So it comes round, goes round, really. But you know, when you see a pig being thrown onto a pitch by a fan, you know something's wrong, don't you? Mm-hmm. Live game.
Marcus is doing very well to keep stum.
Paying attention, I've read a little bit about Barcelona, Real Madrid, and the history of it. And I always seem to side with Barcelona for whatever reason, because I know that from years ago under General Franco, they were oppressed people. Their only freedom was football. That's the only level playing field in their life that they had, that they could freely express themselves. Mm. Anything else, work, food and everything, it was all controlled from Madrid, and their only freedom in life was to play football. And that is why, you know, that event is so highly charged, there's so much riding on it, it's more than a club, that's tomorrow, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's why it's there, because it's more than that. You can see Piqué going along that line when he does finally retire as a footballer, you can see it's more than just football for him after this, in standing up for people of Catalan. And it won't die down. This is going to be for all our lifetime, I feel. But as I said, it's a sad case. But I feel that Piqué is right to stand up for what he believes in. Because it's not just him. It's not just him as a footballer. It's his family. It's people that he's grown up around. It's for the people that don't have a voice like what he has, and a position to have that platform as he does as well. And that's why I think he stands up for him.
Yeah. See, the thing is, I think too many people are getting involved in the situation too much. I mean, you've got the Barcelona president saying, you know, if Catalonia gains independence, you know, Barcelona will leave La Liga. And then you've got the Catalan sports minister saying, you know, Barcelona might be able to play in another country. And then all of a sudden you've got radio stations saying, well, can they come to the Premier League? And it gets silly. I mean, look, let's be 100% honest. La Liga needs Barcelona as much as Barcelona needs La Liga. You know, if it's just Real Madrid in that league, you know, you can see the viewing figures go down. You can imagine how much it will affect the league. It's the same with Rangers and Celtic. If they ever leave this SPL, the league is dead. So they need teams like this. So I just think that, you know, it's much ado about nothing, so to speak, even though obviously it's a serious issue in terms of, you know, the whole voting system. But to consider Barcelona leaving La Liga over this, I think it's ridiculous.
I think it's ridiculous, but Madrid will need Barcelona anyway. Mm. They can't live by themselves. It's a bit like Rangers can't live without Celtic and vice versa. They need each other to bounce off.
Yeah.
So if that crazy decision was made and Barcelona came out of it, it would be a mockery for football.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, speaking of mockeries, I like this segue. Mockery. This is my opinion, right? Carlo Ancelotti, his contract at Bayern Munich was terminated after they lost 3-0 against Paris Saint-Germain. The club's chief exec, Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, said, the performance of our team since the start of the season did not meet the expectations we put on them. Now, Arjen Robben, who's no stranger to sticking the knife in, so to speak, he dug it deeper in Ancelotti's back by saying that there's better coaching at his son's youth team than under Ancelotti, which I think is bang out.
Did he seriously say that?
Yeah, he said that. He said that to a German paper. Now, if you think about it, when a club sacks someone with the list of honours Ancelotti possesses, there's always a deeper problem than just a head coach, isn't there?
Definitely ego issues again, I think. And if Robin feels like that, why don't he just take his badges, put his name down for the job and go and show what he can do? He's disrespecting Carlo Ancelotti's CV of what he's done as a player and a manager. He's coached some brilliant players over those years as well, been around it all, seen it all. It just seems that, you know, something's not quite right there. You know, the first point of blame I would look at is his players not getting on board with Ancelotti for whatever reason it is. And then that gets back to, you know, Carlo Ancelotti. And then he's on that pulls the trigger on him, so to speak. So sad again that a manager loses his job with such a proven track record based on, all right, they've lost 3-0 against PSG. What, they're not capable of scoring goals with Lewandowski up top. Of course they are.
Rod?
Yeah, just they're known for it, these Dutch players, to throw the dummy out, and it's just poor taste by Arjen Robben, especially with the playing career he had, as well as the coaching and managing career he had. What was it? 3 Champions League, Premier League, La Liga, German League. I mean, World Championship clubs. It's just a joke. And like Marcus said, you know, it's just poor form for him. And you just got to have a bit of respect. But something's obviously gone on behind the scenes, and you know, they're on a downfall. I think maybe Guardiola seen it last year, but you know, they look like they're in trouble, so they need to sort it out quick.
And Lee, this is the third time Ancelotti's been sacked. Ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah, especially when I've been trying to get Wenger sacked for a decade. yeah, when you're getting that level of manager getting potted. Yeah, for what seemingly a couple of bad results, a couple of draws and a loss, or a couple of losses and a draw, whatever it was. Obviously, the final nail in his coffin was losing 3-0 to PSG. But you know, I look at it and I think that, you know, Roger said, Arjen Robben, I've never liked the guy. I don't know him, but from what I see of him, he looks like he'd stab you in the back. That's how he comes across to me, even in his Chelsea days. He just looks like one of them guys that rates himself so highly, yeah, that nobody else's opinion matters. Yeah, and they've obviously clubbed together a few of the players and they've snaked him and they've got him the sack. And because they're Bayern Munich and because they're one of the biggest clubs in world football, they thought, well, what do we do? Do we keep the players unhappy and perform so badly that we embarrass ourselves across Europe? Or do we pull the trigger, get rid of him and keep the players happy? And they've bolted and they've sacked him. And I think that's ridiculous. Again, at Chelsea, he was sacked as well, wasn't he?
Yeah.
You know, Chelsea have done all right. Yeah, he got sacked after winning a double. you know, but when you're at these top elite football clubs, that's the decisions these owners and chief execs come out with. And that's why they're still top elite football clubs. You know, and sometimes, I mean, Chelsea ain't done too badly since, have they? Let's be honest. But he will not struggle getting another job. He is a fantastic football manager, mate. So, you know, I think that, you know, Arjen Robben wants to try staying on his feet instead of tucking up managers, man. The guy is a proven cheat. We've seen that. Seen that against Arsenal a couple of seasons ago when he's diving around like a baby. Yeah, crying and getting players sent off and that. Do you know what I mean? How about stay on your feet instead of trying to get your manager sacked? That's a fellow professional. You've just got sacked. Yeah, do you know what I mean? It's wrong, man. It stinks.
Yeah, never trust a guy on football who wears tights anyway.
Exactly.
I was going to give you a rendition of Let It Go there, Lee.
Marcus has never worn tights, has he?
Joking, are you? At Wimbledon, they'd be burnt on sight.
One manager showed up in fishnet stockings as well. That got reported back.
It's all going to be in the autobiography, man. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Do you think Robin gets confused when he sees road signs that say no left turn? Well, look, we've got a couple of comments, funny enough. Yanakis has got off his deathbed. He's probably taken some Pro Plus and a can of Red Bull. He says, Ancelotti lost the dressing room, to be fair. They wanted him out from last season. Okay, fair enough. And Dan De Luca, who happens to be Italian, says, Ancelotti is still the best current manager in the world.
Huh? He's up there. He's definitely up there. I wouldn't say he's the best manager in the world. I personally think Jose Mourinho is.
From an Arsenal fan, that means a lot.
Yeah, mate, I hated him when he was at Chelsea. Yeah, just his old arrogance. But when he went and left or got sacked, mutual agreement, whatever it was, when he came back, I don't know what it was, but something just clicked with me and I thought, you know what, this guy's actually a genius, man. Yeah, and I've loved him ever since. But yeah, Ancelotti's up there, definitely. Simeone's up there. Them three for me are my three at the minute.
I'd love to see Simeone at Arsenal for his energy.
Could you imagine the first day he walks in the dressing room, Mesut Ozil will absolutely brick it seeing him walk in. He'll have to do some work.
great stuff. Well, on a final note, I know people have been asking me, why do you have a Legia Warsaw and Lech Poznan logo on the synopsis image? I'll let you guys know. Now, according to several news sources, Legia Warsaw players were attacked by their own fans after losing 3-0 against rivals Lech Poznan. The reports say around 50 ultras stormed the team by slapping players and threatening more of the same treatment if they play like that again. What can I say about it? What can I ask you? Marcus, you guys at Wimbledon were a bit aggressive, so to speak. Did any fans, actually, no, did you slap up a few fans?
No chance. Get on our team bus? No chance. We used to have photographers and journalists wrecking themselves at our training fields. And we told them, if you come off that concrete and step on the grass, you play our rules. And the odd one would cross that line and we'd have to deal with him in our own special way.
It wasn't Custis by any chance, because he's got a bit of previous, hasn't he?
I think we was looking for Gary Lineker to come down there, but he never took up the invitation.
I'm not surprised.
Never took it up.
No surprise.
He was always having a go at our boys and that, and he refused to come down, so... probably still looking for him, to be fair.
Well, he's good with 140 characters, isn't he? Is Lineker.
Anyway. Yep.
Safer there.
There you go. Until you get to him. Exactly. Until you get to him. Still got that voodoo doll, yeah? Rod, come on, I'm sure you've heard or seen a few things.
No, I haven't, not over in this country. You obviously heard about it in Italy, Lazio and Roma, but No, never heard of it over here. We've been chased off few coaches. We were thinking Frickley away. We got playing for FC United. We the coach got bricked, but none of them were brave enough to come on the coach.
There you are. Lee, any experiences as a fan with players?
Not really. No, mate, I get death threats for saying Wenger out. Could you imagine what would happen to me if I stormed a team coach? Hey, I wouldn't be here on this podcast right now, would I? Do you know what I mean? But, mate, if that is true, Yeah, I guarantee that team win the next football match. 100% they will go out and win that next game. Yeah, and the next time they play their local rivals, they will smash them. Yeah, because they will be so scared of being attacked again. Yeah, that they will give guts and blood. They'll leave it all on the pitch next game, trust me.
Yeah. Well, Yannick is, he mentioned something which is quite interesting. It happens in Cyprus every week, and he's right, because I remember last season there was some Anorthosis fans that actually hid in the AEK training facility, and when the players went out to train, they just ambushed them. There's actually video clips of this, so someone has obviously got on the pitch and just videoed it as well. I mean, don't help anything, just stick it on YouTube. Yeah, that's great. There you go. I'm glad we've ended the show on a positive note with fans getting or beating up players. Sorry, Marcus. Before I let you guys go, Marcus, what's your Twitter handle and what are you doing with yourself at the moment?
Me, you know, I do quite a lot of work with Troy Townsend and Kick It Out, talking to all the academy clubs about differences and discrimination, racism, homophobia is another topic we talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to bring that sort of awareness to their general sort of persona. Because we saw that it just helps make them more of a rounded individual. And the game's a lot different to when myself was first coming through. And all it was, you know, how could you train on the pitch and how could you play in the game? Obviously now we've got technology and many advancements. The world's a different place for the modern day player to grow up in. So we just try and channel into their life skills set and improve them that way.
Great stuff. And you're quite active on Twitter as well, aren't you, mate?
Yeah, I'm kind of active and inactive at the same time. So I don't get involved with any arguments out there. That's just not me. I'm not a keyboard warrior. I just think I'm a, you know, if it comes to it, I'll be out of here. Looking for something. I don't want to be doing it over a keyboard. I think I'll put it around there, make people think, give them a little bit of joy for the day or whatever it is, and keep myself cool like that.
Excellent. Wonderful. And you're on Twitter at Marcus11Gale.
At Marcus11Gale. That's my Twitter handle.
Excellent.
If you want to follow.
They will. They shall. They should. They shall and they should. Mr. G?
Rod James Giggs.
Oh, we're both Mr. G.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Go on, Rodri. You go first. Go on.
Rod James Giggs.
Well, you could do the whole age before beauty thing, Lee. Come on now.
Yeah, well, you know how it is, man. Look, I'm 35. I'm still looking fresh.
Million-mile round trip. Yeah, great stuff. Joe, give us your handle. I know that everyone's watching because of you anyway, Lee, so I don't even know why I'm asking, but go on.
Nah, you're doing a disservice to the other two, man. That's out of order saying that. Come on, man. I'm probably the least well known out of all of us in this podcast. So
I'm putting your legs like the daddy long legs that came on my ass the other day.
my Twitter handle is LeeGunner82.
Excellent. And tell us, listen, just dispel a few myths here, because I know we've spoken about this before, right? You don't get free tickets through Arsenal Fan TV, do you, Lee?
Of course I don't, mate. I spent nearly £800 with all the cock-ups going to Belarus the other day. So if somebody wants to donate me that back, then fantastic. But no, and, you know, what I always find amusing is that people will assume that because I haven't been for 6 years, yeah? But I've chosen not to go for 6 years because I didn't agree with what the manager was doing and blah, blah, blah. This summer, I decided, you know what? I'm Wenger out. I'm going to go to as many games as I can this season. And if it all goes tits up, I'm going to voice my opinion at the game. Yeah, rather than sitting on my sofa, tweeting, moaning about it. I haven't got a ticket for Watford away. I haven't got a ticket for Belgrade away. Yeah, you know, whether I get one or not, it's a different story. But it won't be a freebie, that's for sure. And it'd be paying out my hard-earned wages. So yeah, there we go.
Mm. Well, at Watford, Vicarage Road is an old stadium, so I'm sure you can jib it. Then again, Marcus can probably tell you how to get in through the back door somewhere.
He played it's all changed now.
Is it changed? Yeah. I'm sure you can still jib it, no? You can jib it.
See, the problem with Watford is you only get 2,000 a ticket allocation.
Mm.
Yeah, and it's only down the road. It's down the M1 for most people. So, So yeah, it's going to be a tough one to get hold of that. But then, you know, I've got a lot of mates of mine that can source tickets. So I've had a guy give me his membership for the season for home games. So, you know, he can only do Saturday 3 o'clock kickoff. So I've just got his ticket for the season. Away tickets, I've got a couple of people that can get them for me. But yeah, no freebies, man. I wish I did have freebies. It would have saved me a few quid.
Yeah. Well, just give Belgrade a miss, yeah? Just give that one a miss. I wouldn't like to go there. But that's just me. Right, gents, thank you ever so much for your time. Guys, it's been a fantastic show. Thank you, everyone, for listening and watching. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter at Shoot the Defence. And we'll be back. Shall we do a show next week, Rod? I know it's internationals. Can you be bothered to do a show next week? Do
one? If Wales win, yeah.
Okay.
No.
You're on. Who's Wales got?
Georgia.
Oh, we're doing a show next week then, aren't we? Christ. All right.
We've got Ireland the week after, so.
You're still going to beat them as well.
No, not with Gareth Bale out now.
Is he out?
Yeah.
Oh, God. That's all over.
Yeah, what about Ramsey? Is he playing?
Who?
Ramsey.
Yeah, he'll be taking part.
He's actually been quite good for the last few games. He's been alright. Okay. Yeah, I've laid off him this season.
Well, guys, thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back next week, I guess, if Wales win. See you later.